Welcome to a podcast of Beyond the Book, a presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center. Copyright Clearance Center is the world's largest provider of copyright compliance solutions through a wide range of innovative licensing services and comprehensive educational programs for authors, publishers, and their audiences in academia, business, and research institutions. For more information about Beyond the Book and Copyright Clearance Center, please go to www.beyondthebook.com.
Now, I want to turn now for an interesting perspective to Colonel Dan Baggio. He is currently the Chief of Army Media Relations, assigned to the Office of the Chief of Army Public Affairs at the Pentagon. He's had 24 years of active duty, including 11 overseas commands and staff positions in Korea, Japan, Turkey, and elsewhere. And Colonel Baggio, welcome. And I guess I want to just sort of ask you first about your relationship with the media. I think people here would love to hear what that is exactly. You told me some of your best friends are journalists.
That's very true. Actually, I knew Jane fairly well, and we were over there before, and she's an excellent reporter. And I'm not saying that to try to cheese up to her at all. But the truth of it is, when you talk about honest and fair reporting, I mean, honesty, live shots. I mean, I guess the thing that bothers me about reporters who come with a preset agenda and are not even, and if you have an agenda, at least be open to what you see. I mean, if Jane tells something that I do like or that I don't like, it doesn't matter. I know she's being truthful. She was out there frankly, in some of the toughest stuff in that second battle of Fallujah, right out front with her helmet on, reporting. It was impressive to see her out there with the 1st Infantry Division. We were talking before we came in here, and really I always view media like any other profession. I mean, you can't paint them all in one corner. It's a spectrum. And one of the things that I try to do as a military, I'm really the liaison between the media and the military.
Right. In fact, Colonel, maybe you can just give people a 30-second take on what the role is and how that works in Iraq.
Well, I'm not in Iraq now, so I can't speak for what's going on there right now. But what I really believe in is I try to facilitate the media to tell their story, to try to, if they got needs, they want to visit a unit, I try to get them out there to tell their story. Obviously, the military, we have our talking points. We have, like any corporation or any company, there are certain things that we want to tell, relevant information about our organization. But other than that, we want to provide access and not try to spin anybody, but give them access to things, the good and the bad, to include Abu Ghraib. I took the first group of folks out to see the aftermath of Abu Ghraib. Matter of fact, Carol Rosenberg, who's not with us today, I think was in that busload of people that I took out there. And things like that are painful, but I think I too think it's important to get it out there because the public needs to know. I mean, for every 100 attaboys, one aw shucks kind of wipes them all out, and those are tough to live with, but I think those hard-biting things are important as well. But I will tell you that as far as relations with the media are concerned, one of the things that I try to do is I try to develop personal relationships with them to understand what they want, what they need. And I think that's important because there's a natural friction between the military and the media. It's natural, and you got to understand that friction or tension because, we're concerned with security. We got a mission to do. We want to save soldiers' lives. We've got certain objectives we've got to accomplish. And at the same time, the media have their First Amendment rights. They've got a story to tell, and so the natural culture of the military is to keep information in. The natural culture of the journalists is to tell information. So I'm there telling guys, well, hey, we're trying to change the culture of engagement. Say it's okay to talk to the media. It's okay to do that. So that makes it doubly harder for me when you introduce a certain media who's on this end of the spectrum who maybe doesn't have the same sort of integrity or doesn't treat things the right way. Because then when a person like that does a story that you think is less than fair, then it has effects on what the attitude of the military is. So I do a lot of massaging and a lot of work with our folks, and we try to encourage engagement. Matter of fact, right now within the U.S. Army, I can't speak for the whole military, we've got something called Initiative 7. But basically what it is we're encouraging all of our folks to engage the media, talk to the media. We've got a program called 3-2-1 now where we even have our senior leaders, and talk about a throwback or actually just a polar opposite from the stigma of Vietnam, we're trying to encourage leaders to once a quarter, starting with the generals, and it trickles down to do three engagements with what we call community outreach, like speeches, those kinds of things, two things with the media, and then one thing with our own internal public affairs apparatus, you know, our base newspapers, our Pentagon Channel, those sorts of things. So it doesn't happen overnight, but we're trying to encourage folks to engage more. And I think it's very important because we have an important story to tell, even with the warts. But I think overall, you know, there's a lot of soldiers and Marines, airmen, sailors out there doing a really hard work and unappreciated. And I think each one of those guys has a story to tell. And it takes people like this to tell those stories. So overall, like people say, cautiously optimistic. I'm always cautiously optimistic about the relationship. But I think it takes hard work, and I think it's important for us to have a great relationship.
I would like to ask you whether you have an opinion on who needs each other more. I mean, clearly the military needs the media to tell that story, and the media needs the military. And if you can sort of weigh that, and then Jane, perhaps you could tell us what you think of that question.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You could almost say 50-50 on the one hand. But it's interesting, Jane mentioned briefly that we're in this global information environment now where you have all the things like the webs, blogs, you have YouTube. It's an environment where people get their news not from necessarily the traditional news sources, which makes it challenging for us. And there are some who will tell me, they'll say, well, why do we even need the media? We can tell the story our own way. Well, I think it is good to post our own things up there on our own websites and things, but I think there's always going to be a fundamental need to engage because people watch TV, they pick up a newspaper in the morning and they read it. So I think it's something that we have to sustain. It's definitely important for us. I don't know about percentages. I would guess it's about equally beneficial.
And Jane, what do you think about that?
I think part of the reason that the military needs us is, please don't take this the wrong way. We don't believe your press releases quite so much. And I don't think the public does either. And that doesn't mean that they're wrong, and that doesn't mean you're not really well-meaning. And, again, Colonel Baggio, not because he's sitting next to me, really is. I have to point out that he is kind of like the poster boy for really good media relations people. They're not all like him. They're not all as charming and articulate. But anyway, the reason that the military needs us, I think, is because if they're telling us that they are, let's see, they've launched an airstrike and 15 insurgents have been killed and Al-Qaeda has been routed from a town in western Al-Anbar, I would hope that nobody is going to print that verbatim or put that on air without actually being out there. It's very difficult to check, and that's one of the disturbing things now about not being able to get out quite so much, is when you get out there, if you're there and you have to be there, and particularly for television, there's no substitute for being there, you will find very often that there was an airstrike, that there were some people killed. It's very difficult to figure out whether they're insurgents, even for the military. It's so complex there that if they're going to get across key parts of their story, they do need someone to interpret that part of the story for them. We need them because you can't just roam around Iraq these days. In fact, you can't walk across the street in some places these days, and that's why we rely on them to essentially give us access, not only to take us to places, to talk to us, to tell us what they're thinking, to introduce us to Iraqi leaders who we also can't get to. We rely on the military these days for pretty well everything when it comes to anything to do with military operations. Those days when you could actually just walk up and cover both sides of the conflict were gone a few years ago. So we're inextricably linked, I'd say.
In the book, there are at least a couple of anecdotes from reporters who resent that in some way, that they are reliant on the military. And one reporter talks about certain reporters using the Black Hawk helicopters as taxis, and she seems to think that that's cheating somehow. You don't feel that way.
I have never understood why, if you had a tool, you wouldn't use it. You know, if I'm standing in the rain in New York City and a taxi's going by, I'm going to take that taxi. If I'm in Baghdad and some general says, I'm flying north today, do you want to fly with me? Why in the world would I not do that? Now, I think that criticism perhaps comes from a perception that reporters who are getting on generals' helicopters are doing nothing but getting on generals' helicopters. And if that were the case, that is disturbing. But if you are using that as any journalist does and will as just another tool and just another piece of a very complicated puzzle, then I can't imagine how that could be wrong.
Right. And Colonel, a last question for you. I asked you when we were getting ready for all of this, why would a man who had been in the infantry for so long want to move over to public affairs? And you said it can be pretty exciting itself, and perhaps you have a story that illustrates that for us.
Well, it is. It's next to carrying an M4 and clearing trenches and that sort of thing. I the media military relationship thing. I mean, I'm in a knife fight every day. And my boss General Kukul says that all the time, but it's very very true. I mean, I do deal with a wide spectrum of issues, everything from good, bad, in between, controversial, not so controversial, mundane to thrilling, I guess. But it is a very exciting business. One thing I just do got to have to comment. The one thing that I have is my integrity. And it's just kind of a piggyback on Jane's. I appreciate the kind comments from Jane on that. But the folks that I've worked with, as far as being a public affairs professional, I can lie to you once. But then once I'm caught, I'll never be effective again. I might be effective once, and then that's it. So, I'm all for telling the truth. There's obviously certain things that involve operational security that we can't talk about, but engagement within bounds is very important. On the contrary, I think one of the things that concerns me, and I give you just an anecdote, not about Iraq, but it's an anecdote when I was in Korea that I saw once, not as a public affairs officer, but it's one of the reasons that I wanted to become a public affairs officer relevant to this question, is there's an old exercise we used to do called Team Spirit, which is a big return of forces to Korea, and it's a big logistics thing, a maneuver exercise. It's huge. So At that time, I was a infantry battalion personnel officer, and we had two new lieutenants that came in theater. I had to pick them up and bring them to the maneuver box. Well, anyway, long story short, we got lost in the middle of Seoul, and we're driving an overpass, and I noticed one of the little universities there, and they're kind of like a little clamshell-shaped sort of a structure, and there's a group of protesters. It's kind of the spring ritual that happens every year there, with a line of these riot police there. And then there was news cameras back there taking pictures of this little riot. But across the street, there's a grandma and a granddaughter, eating ice cream cones, people going to shops, people just going about the business. But the funny thing is, you watch the news that night, and the camera picks up, and you think all of Korea was on fire and there was a huge riot. Because I remember my mom and dad called me, and it doesn't matter, I'm 48 years old, I'm still my mom and dad's little boy. But at the time, they called me and said, man, you got to be careful in Korea. The whole place is... I said, it is? I don't know. I didn't see that. But that's one of the things. I paint that example, is that sometimes those folks who want to blow up a story, make it bigger than what it is, that's also dangerous. And so there's and all people aren't like Jane on the media side of the house. So I just think it's something that's very important to nurture the relationship. It's an exciting business. I have no regrets. Well, sometimes I have regrets, but generally speaking, I have no regrets for getting in public affairs. I tell you what, I think probably... it's rewarding, but very frustrating, but probably some of the hardest work I've done since I've been in the military.
Mike, just finally, before we go to questions from the audience, and we want to encourage you to stay to ask questions of anyone here that you'd like to. For Columbia Journalism Review, are you following through on this? Will there be more looking at the reporting in Iraq and the way that Iraq is changing reporting itself? Do you have any projects?
Yeah, certainly. We're actually sending one of our staff writers to Iraq probably in January, partly to look at something that the colonel mentioned or somebody mentioned. There's there are a lot of what they call mill blogs out there, which are sometimes soldiers, ex-soldiers, and that kind of thing, and talk about a range. Some of them are very good and very, very good, and some of them are really not good. And he wants to to take a look at them, and he's going to go actually with a couple of them and see what they report versus what is real, what he sees from his perspective. I just wanted to mention one thing in response to something earlier. In the book, it didn't. There's incidents of military press tension in the book, certainly, but it didn't come through as the theme that I expected it to. And what does come through strongly to me is the tension between the especially when Mr. Bremer was in charge, the coalition provisional authority. Between the politicians and the press, they seemed to see they painted a picture in their press conferences of something that was totally different from what the reporters who were going around and actually seeing with their eyes were seeing, and it got almost comical to some of them because a new reporter would come in and express frustration. And ask a question. This isn't what I'm seeing, and they'd say, "Oh, there's the fresh eye." You know,
right? All the old hands would kind of roll their eyes.
Yeah, and there's a story in there of a guy from the CPA who was complaining about the reporter was complaining about the gas shortage, and the guy in the green zone didn't know about it, and all of Baghdad knew about it. And you know, it's just that tension was much more pronounced. Hmm.
Well, I want to thank our panelists, Colonel Dan Baggio, Jane Arif, and Mike Hoyt.
Beyond the Book is an educational presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center, with conferences and seminars featuring leading authors and editors, publishing analysts, and information technology specialists. Beyond the Book is the premier source for knowledge on the latest business issues facing today's dynamic publishing industry, from initial research to final publication and beyond.